Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance.
Hello, my freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Sterling Getty, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Neutron and Captain tomorrow as the After Midnight Bombers. And then delve into a world of strange magic with Incoherent Dust and Victoria Frost. And Fridays are split between Crawling Into the Darkest with Pam and Break On Through. Saturday, join Aphasia and Babla as they teach you the fine art of being part saint, part sinner. And then on Monday mornings, join Victoria Frost and Versus Goliath with the Hearts of LNP. Now, these shows are designed so that you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, my co-host, MK Rock. Can't wait to get into and read your word. Good evening, Mindy. How you doing?
Doing great. Rex, how are you?
Excellent. Oh, that and the song is called Knife Edge, and it's from Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
Oh, okay. I never heard it before. I'm like, who is this? Who is this? That was a cacophony of sound. It was just incredible. Great.
Oh, yeah.
Great theme.
A three-piece band, as a matter of fact. Keith Emerson does all the keyboard and the Moog work. They had Carl Palmer on drums and Greg Lake playing guitar, acoustic, and bass.
Wow. That was a heck of a song. I had, like I said, I was really, really curious because I had never heard it before. Great, great intro into the show, too. You do a good job with that.
Yeah, it does offer up a nice tone of dystopian madness.
Perfect.
So how you doing tonight?
Doing great. It looks like you've got some fantastic poetry on the line there.
Yeah, we've got we're going to start off with the finishing out the Kurt Vonnegut quotes and for the first half of the show, and then dig into the second half with Pythagoras quotes. So quite a differentiation of thought.
But weighty meals on both ends there. That's big food for
that. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because Kurt enjoyed his dystopian angles, too, with the thoughts of Slaughterhouse-Five and
absolutely.
Other works.
Absolutely. Well, do you want to break right into some of these works, then?
Absolutely. Let's have some fun.
All right. Well, you are on.
Start with Victim by Damn It Dave. And he took a couple of quotes. I was a victim of a series of accidents, as we all are. We are what we pretend to be, so we must be careful of what we pretend to be. And here we are, trapped in the amber of the moment. And this is called Victims by Damn It Dave. In politics, we cheer the slickest horse, though it won't run a fair, unbiased course. We vote, and yet we never make a dent to keep a crook out of our government. The rhetoric is really nice to hear, but in the end, the price is very dear. It doesn't matter what we all believe. We're victims of the accidents they leave. The candidate's not what he seems to be. He doesn't heed the average person's plea. We vote him in, and then the die is cast. The moment for real change is then. They trap us in the amber of hot air, pretending that they truly seem to care. But they are very practiced to deceive. We're victims of the accidents they leave. And poem. Ooh, I like that. The taking a bit of each of the quotes and driving them as part of the piece itself. And boy, this kind of hit on the note of where we're running quite wild these days. Nothing seems to be paying out on any level. And we get to pay for it on every level.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dave does offer up the truth. And you know what? Some things are what they are. Unless we stand up and make the change to ourselves, nothing ever really changes. And that's got to start with, you know what? There needs to be a bit more transparency around here. Let's start with making sure the elections are fair and honest. And then we can move into whether you actually deserve to be in office, despite the garbage you tilt our ears with to open up, and then the road you actually went down after you got into office, which is a great. So what do you think?
I think it's really, really interesting. First of all, you did a great read on this. I think it's really interesting the way that he poses the difference and distinctions between they and us and they and us. Victimization here on this end being received in the us end. But the they and the us are all us, really. And it just kind of makes you take off on your own little tangents of thought in regards to the them and us divisiveness of the way things appear to be, when as a truth, we're all part of the same system, and that they are the us. And it's a great write, and a thought-provoking.
And
for
you're
sure.
quite right on that. But sometimes they forget that. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts even worse. Nobody ever wants to give it up.
I'll tell you what, you put out some real weighty material here in those quotes, and he picked up and ran with them in a great fashion.
Absolutely. That was a nice start for this evening.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and move on with the next one here, because you definitely do have a full boat here of work. And the next one is Upon the Edge by Longfellow Serenade. And you know what? Why don't you go ahead and read this one too, I think.
Not a problem. Upon the Edge by Longfellow Serenade. I like to live my life upon the edge. From here, I get a very different view. And though there's danger here upon the ledge, there's knowledge here that many won't accrue. Upon the fringe, I see life's mystery. I understand the universe much more, and feel the weighted pen of history. The edge is helping walk through wisdom's door. You stay within the center, so secure, content with information you are fed, and you assume your haven will endure as rhetoric and dogma fill your head. But out here on the rim, I see so much. No matter what these skeptics may allege, it is the status quo that's out of touch. I feel much wiser standing on the edge. End poem. And Longfellow took, I want to stand as close to the edge as I can without going over. Out on the edge, you see all kinds of things you can't see from the center. And Longfellow took the same road as Dave and went purposefully into the mix without any illusion and just ran with it. And all those people that sit on the outer corners and edges asking questions, they're all conspiracy theorists these days. They're not to be believed. They're communists. They're radicals. They need to be jailed. And so goes the many splendid thing of yesteryear coming forth into today's angle of political rhetoric. But he hits on the same thing, same value that they walk along, but in a different manner. Out on the edge, you do see more. You get a better perspective, that 40,000-foot view, instead of being cored right in the middle and believing that which is fed to you upon a daily basis. And the fact is, if you take a step back from that which is fed and actually do a little bit of investigation, you find out most of what you're being fed is total crap, meant to drive a narrative and keep you indistinguishable from those who don't bother looking at all. And that's the general operational thought within this piece itself. And how about you, Mindy?
I agree with you 100% and with Longfellow Serenade. That edge does provide that sharper, more acute perspective on things, whereas if you're in the middle of the mix, you're kind of mired in the crap. And buried in it sometimes. So there is a real opportunity on those peripheries to glimpse a little bit through a little bit clearer skies. And this is a great write for tonight.
Yeah, I think I go out on the edge sometimes by picking these quotes. Where would we go with this stuff? But nobody disappoints. That's the fun part. There's always such a vast array of thought. People walk all over the prompts in varied forms and voices, which is pretty cool.
That is cool. When it renders such wonderful work, you can't argue with that.
Oh, absolutely not.
All right. Just posted the next piece, and it's by Inner Sanctum. And if you don't mind, I'll go ahead and read this one.
Okay.
And it's entitled Feet of Lead and Wings of Tin. Around and around and around we spin with feet of lead and wings of tin. We think we'll soar right through the air, but we aren't going anywhere. We're tethered by our own beliefs to hubris isles and shallow reefs. We eat the palaver and grin. Around and around and around we spin. The carousel may seem to turn, but only wise men will discern that only fools will ride therein with feet of lead and wings of tin. End poem.
Great read, Mindy. Thank you very much. Oh, that was a nice touch. What was it? Only fools will ride therein. There's another one. Only fools step in where wise men refuse to go. Or angels fear to tread. And that fits in well with the thought because you took round and round we spin with feet of lead and wings of tin was the quote. And took a nice turn with this, hitting off with the beginning, around and round and round we spin with feet of lead and wings of tin. We think we'll soar right through the air, but we aren't going anywhere. There is that note of wanting to touch the sun, so to speak, but because of the leaded feet and the wings of tin, we can't even get ourselves off the ground. Let alone reach that far to touch the sky, so to speak. And it hits on that nice thought in the second stanza, tethered, we're too tethered by our own beliefs and hubris isles and shallow reefs. That's a great thought right there, especially and going along with the palaver and grin. Ooh, kind of biting on the same angle of dystopian spin that we get mired into the point where nothing makes sense. And all of a sudden, it is that round and round. And I like that last stanza too. The carousel may seem to turn. Yeah. Kind of dream a bit, read that one. And then again, the wise men, there's that sort of being outside the norm again. The wise men will discern. You got to read that. And you did so well. What'd you think?
I think this is a marvelous write, first of all, incredibly insightful, really succinct, but absolutely captures that thought with wonderful, wonderful verse. And that phrasing, feet of lead and wings of tin, provides us with a really strong visual image. And that weight that holds us despite the fact that heart wants to fly, wings want to fly, but we can't when we're still anchored by that lead and tin. And those earthly things that enslave us. And I think it's a beautiful write. I really love this piece. Wow, you've got some great writes here tonight.
Oh, absolutely.
Really great.
I had fun with the first half last week.
I know. I'm sure I missed a ton of good ones. I know I did.
That's all right. We haven't had you after midnight since we kicked these off.
For a while, that's true, yeah. And, you know, I read the contest prompts that you guys put up, everybody that does the late night shows, and they're always so compelling. It makes you want to write for every one of them. It's just my sleepy time is a little earlier now. I feel like I'm up with the big kids tonight, yeah. But I'm going to get to play.
Oh, I like that. You brought your sense of humor along, too.
Up with the big kids. All right. And here's the next one, if you want to go ahead and take that away.
The Edge of Contempt by Rob Azza. Swallowed up by covered faces, these hanging connections filled with pipeline dreams gather about beneath haunted skies and linger with doubt as I push beyond that fray with great weight and splash and gulp and cruise the damply lit street lamps with fever mites lapping at the trough of the unsettled. A mass of motherless hounds dangling shards of glass between tooth and gum, each racing to beat the tremors, feeding their anxiety, their wants, their madness. As I wax the sword upon my hip, now twisting into fatty thighs, dulling the edges of my contempt. And, talk about digging into a touch of darkness to finish that out with. But this is quite descriptive in the realm of where he hits the, where was it? Dankly street lamps, fever, massive motherless hounds, dangling shards of glass between tooth and gum. Boy, that kind of sounds a little extra zombie-ish with a little bit more flavor in. Each racing to beat the tremors, feeding their anxieties, their wants, their madness. And I like that thought. I waxed the sword upon my hip.
Getting into the right part. He served up a dish for you to bite into, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Getting into the fatty thighs so you can bleed them out real quick. Got to cut that femoral artery.
God. this one really had a pulse, and you did a great read on it. I want to hear more of your thoughts on this piece because I know that it had to a trip switch.
All right, the swallowed up by covered faces. That kind of hits on the notion of being forced to mask up, but it goes a little bit beyond that because the ease in masking up is also the ease in the conflagration it results in because now you've got the criminality out on the streets masked up, and you can't arrest that which you can't actually identify. These hanging connections filled with pipeline dreams gather about beneath haunted skies. Again, there's that note of the haunted skies offering up the darkness of the landscape itself. Pushing beyond the phrase, it hits on that notion of trying to be free of that mass of, as he puts it, motherless hounds. There is a careful note to the, especially with the shards of glass between tooth and gum, and offers up that thought that they are so divisive in thought, deed, and rhetoric that no one is safe from that which spills from their mouths. And the bottom end of this, dulling the edges of my contempt, that there is that note of wax the sword, waxing the tip of a very sharp pen to let loose that which needs to be offered up as truth as opposed to that which is already buried in.
Ah, nice, nice, nice. I knew that you had deep thoughts on that one. I did. This was a great write for you to explore.
Really, yeah, Rob dug into this with a nice touch of darkness as well as a pointed thought.
I was looking at that end section there, and each racing to beat the tremors, feeding their anxieties, their wants, their madness, as I wax the sword upon my hip. And it strikes me as he is trying to cut through because of that contempt that he feels. He's trying to cut through, break through, wrestle his way through the thickness of all in front of him, all around him. And despite the fact that he's trying to tunnel through, so to speak, it's gotten deeper into him. It's taking a deeper bite, moving into his fatty thighs, dulling the edges of that contempt. You know, sometimes when you fight so hard for something and you try to push and force it through, it just doesn't, it doesn't work. It ends up taking more from you. And this one struck me. That's why I had to hear what you, I really had to hear more of what you thought on this one, because it took me in a few different directions. It was a great piece.
Oh, absolutely, because that end line, dulling the edges of my contempt, can either be the motif of getting worn down, or actually feeling a sense of satiation, because you're making a little bit of headway, so to speak.
Oh, I like that. I like that. That's a cool way of looking at it.
Like you said, it can walk a number of avenues. It depends on one's perspective as to the voice and the words offered. So I do like the incongruous where, all right, there's nothing set really in stone. You're just given the point where, hey, enlighten us with what it says to you.
It's a great write and really well explored and well read there too. Nice job. And I'm going to post the next one in the room. And this one's by Valentina Holloway.
Wait. I'm sorry. Yep. Let's wait on her. I put in she dropped me a SoundCloud, uh-huh. But I don't think Jean got that one. And I'd rather hold that until I give it SoundCloud with it.
Sure.
Valentina's
no
got a great voice.
Yes, she does. And yep, okay, I don't see it here yet. So we'll go ahead and move past that and get the next one. And
I'm sorry. Wait a minute.
Okay. Where would you like to go?
Wait a minute. Did I screw up with this one? I think I screwed up with this one.
Define screwed up.
Yeah.
Define
no,
screwed
no,
up.
No. This one's definitely my screw up. Damn. I missed the SoundCloud on this one. I have it. Damn it. Cool. All right, I'm going to save that one.
Is it on there? Is it on there right now? No, it isn't. Okay.
No, it's in
you have it?
It's in one of my packets.
Well, you know what? I'm going to post a piece for you to read. If you want to send it to me, I'll go ahead and try and load it.
Okay, let me see if I can.
You may have to expound a little bit on the piece, but I can try and load it up if you'd like. So let me get another piece here for you. Okay, here's one. I don't know how long it is, but by Mark Loopy. And while that's on, I'll go ahead and try and get that loaded for you.
Okay, sent it.
Okay.
Oops,
I put that in the wrong room. And, hey, Jeremy, how you doing?
I see he's on the board. Aha. Uh-huh.
All right. And,
how you doing, Jeremy? All right. This is Balloon Ride by Mark Loopy. The overlooked world is wonderful. Through the journeys, let me start that again. The overlooked world is wonderful, though the journey sometimes dull. I permanently had to believe there's something more to achieve. Consciously, I would take a look and write out the looks I took, checking them quite carefully off. Thinking about it, I would laugh, except the only reason that I even move is for those I love. I was carried in a balloon. The hot air cooled off too soon. Hard to get up there, but the fall doesn't seem that hard at all. It's currently in progress. Will end soon, but I digress. End poem. And Mark took the prompt. Round and round we spin with feet of lead and wings of tin. This is very much different, right, from the one we had about 10 minutes ago, Inner Sanctum's one. The overlooked world is wonderful, though the journey sometimes dull. There is if he hits on that thought, I was carried in a balloon to finish the back end of the second stanza, but the overlooked world is wonderful. This writes that notation of that which we take for granted rather than opening our eyes to see that which is really out there. There's much to be offered. And then the thought, I had to believe there's something more to achieve. And there is. taking a time each day to, well, the cliched angle, smell the roses, but there's more to it than that. But take a walk in a forest and listen to the trees breathe, the wind whistle through the notations of leaves and pine needles. Get the aroma that walks within that realm. Hear the chittering of the squirrels in the trees, or the hoot of an owl, or something, even the screech of a bald eagle or a red-tailed hawk. Get yourself out and notice that which is out there, the beauty that walks within it. And then he hits on that notion, thinking about it, I would laugh, except the only reason that I even move is for those I love. That kind of hits on that thought of how we become sedentary and don't take the time to give ourselves the affordability of breath past everything that remains whole to us, because we're so endowed in the moment in those things. But if you don't take that time, there is the notion that you end up solidifying yourself to a singularity without actually taking the time to enjoy the life around you, enjoy the motions of the earth, the beauty that which is everything from the heavens above to the ground that your feet are planted upon. And that's a hard hard vision to sit there. But again, the fall doesn't seem that hard at all. It's currently in progress. We'll end soon, but I digress. And the fall kind of hits on that sort of, all right, my feet are leaded to the ground. I got wings of tin, so I really don't have that far to go. If I do fall, it's an easier climb rather than actually being the restoring angle to which I am currently trying to illuminate my mind and soul into, and therefore it's not such a hard thing to actually move above that litany of tenseness which does bind our bodies to this world itself. Nicely done, Mark. I like that. Thank you. And Mindy, did I take long enough?
Yeah, you did perfectly. Yes, everything's all loaded up too. I found it really, really interesting. It's a brevity of sorts, but there's such poignancy in it that it really covers a lot of ground and thought. That first sentence there, the overlooked world, is such a clever phrasing, because the technicality of actually being in the air in a balloon is overlooking the world, but the world itself is overlooked, and that overlooked world is a pretty wonderful place, although the journey is sometimes dull. And there's a contrast there that he's introduced as well. So his phrasing through this thing is really peachy, because it allows so much play in word and thought that you really get to second look at the line, really process it in different ways as you're reading. The layering is masterful here. The last two lines as well. Hard to get up there, but the fall doesn't seem that hard at all. It's currently in progress. Okay, so a fall is in progress. He sees falling as a progress. And it will end soon, but I digress. So progression is in digress. So there's really a wonderful contradiction and a compliment also to the thought there. So he's redoubled his lines in a really masterful way. This is a sharp right, really sharp. And I think he shines in this piece.
Oh, absolutely. Mark is, he's got a couple of degrees in literature and an intelligent man.
Yes.
And
yes,
this
yes,
is, yes. You pointed out some great thoughts in this. I looked at it as the extreme metaphor, and you actually walked within it as it rode, or rose, so to speak, which was a nice, clever turn as well. I like that.
Yes. Boy, you've got some sharp poets here. Wow. Just terrific pieces.
Yeah, they do make judging hell, but I do enjoy it.
what a great problem to have, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. I went ahead and reposted that piece by Valentina SoundCloud. And I've got a caller here, so as soon as I key up the SoundCloud, we'll go ahead and get them in the room. And
cool.
Where'd it go? Oh, here it is. Okay.
And so it goes. Your palms cupping my face, pulling me into you, kissing me. Minutes, hours. We could stay in each other's arms for days, aware of only each other. The world surrounding us faded to mist. Kisses laced with honey, hands moving, gently, urgently, exploring, craving. Nothing else matters. Space between us evaporating, the air swollen, longing to burst. Pulsing like thunder, lightning rippling, the dip of my breath, the gasps of pleasure in yours, my fingertips mapping pathways along your skin, your fingers bringing me to life, holding tightly, the feeling of you blends into the feeling of me, how you tangle your fingers in my hair, how I stroke mine against your chest. You cup my neck, gentle, but with a firmness, absorbing my vulnerability, my fragile, my broken, safe in your strength. Kissing for days, maybe it's only hours, but it feels like eternity. It feels like heaven. It feels like this is what paradise is. Only pausing for breath. Skin on skin, filling the spaces between, folding the corners of the map together, no distance between us, merged. Cravings that were eating us alive, spilling onto the sheets, overwhelming in waves, over and over, crashing onto the shore, pouring into fulfillment of forbidden fantasies, granting your every desire through instinct, not language. Hands straying, then lips, over and over, hour after hour, suspended in time. Tangled, arcane need, preserved in amber. And so it goes.
Wonderful read, Valentina. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. And Mindy, thank you for uploading this. Oh, my God. Here we are, trapped in the amber of the moment. And boy, did she deliver on this piece itself. And Jeremy, welcome. How you doing?
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Excellent. Glad to have you.
Yeah, it sounded like you guys might need another voice in here, so I thought I'd join the fun.
Oh, excellent. We're happy to have you. Always good
yep,
to have
Yep, happy
you.
To be here. Yep, happy to be here.
Excellent. So what do you think of Valentina's voice and write?
Well, I mean, I was hoping to not have to comment on this. it's tough. I mean, I don't know about you, Rex, but and I apologize for being sexist, but for guys, writing something so sexual or so sensual, even better put, is tough. And because there's always that line, right? That line between imagination and literally saying what is going on. And personally, I can't do it. I simply cannot do it. And this rides that line on such a way that really intrigues any gender, because it's tough and it involves imagination. It involves an imagination that has to be handled with a gentle balance. And I think that's what exists here, because it allows the reader to go as far as they want to go, because if you go too far, it's off-putting, right? And it becomes something different. But if you give the reader enough credit to let their mind take it to that extra level or to that comfort level, then it becomes enjoyable for anyone. And I think that's what was done here. So kudos. Wow. I'm blushing. And it's beautiful. I mean, and especially with what we're talking about with the prompt, and I'm sorry to join late, but to be a Vonnegut prompt and to do this is an imagination level that is enviable. So I think it was a beautiful write on many levels in that regard.
For somebody who didn't really want to comment on this because of that angle of thought, you did a great job. Wonderful thoughts in this, and you offered up quite a bit as far as your thoughts going with it and how it works. And you're right. Sometimes the difference between men and women when it comes to writing sensual thoughts is hard pressed because we're totally two different entities mentally and physically. So the angle of drawing out that subtlety, that metaphorical angle, can be difficult. But considering how you comment on this, I think you could do a fairly decent job, if not a really good job, in offering up a metaphorical, subtle, and sensual voice from yourself. And Mindy, I know you dug this. What'd you think?
I did. It was exquisite, and I have to comment on Jeremy also. He provided some insight there. Being someone who works with Gene every week, trying to come up with new ideas for the artist seduction night, to hear a man's perspective on their writing of a seductive piece is really kind of enlightening, and it might help with themes from now on. So thank you for that. And the comment was beautiful. I know Valentina will love that. This piece was exquisite. Her voice, as you say, is charming, and she delivers a beautiful read as well. And with such material to follow from, she can't help but have a smash here. I think it's really kind of clever the way that she uses the phrase, "and so it goes," because there's such a softness and a non-stressed flow to that word and those phrases that leads into an absolutely exquisite coupling and an embrace of two that is so special. And that space between us evaporating, air swollen, longing to burst, pulsing like thunder, lightning rippling. There's a real visceral, actual feeling to this. It has a texture to the write itself. And so her title, although clever entry, really kind of belies what impact the words themselves have, because there is some definite thunder and atmospheric snapping going on here in the body of the write.
Oh, excellent. I like that too. You're right. There is such a nice sensual note to this, but it's really subtle. It's delivered in such a manner as to, as Jeremy said, it delivers enough poignancy, but doesn't deliver you into the heaviness of the moment, so to speak. And she drops in kisses laced with honey, which kind of hits on that tone of thought and color revolving around amber, which was a nice touch. The exploring craving also hits on that note of amber. We're intrigued by amber because it's that thing that takes a million years to configure it, but we're always fascinated with that which is stuck within the amber in that given moment of time, 10, 15, 20, 30 million years ago, which is a nice touch. And then air swollen, longing to burst, pulsing like thunder, lightning rippling. You get that notation of a thunderstorm brewing in the moment without the very dip into where it is and what is going on, so to speak. Gentle and firmness. So there's a nice offering between both, excuse me, the sound of a voice, but there's a nice texture of hands and feeling. That which pressed up against the fingertips, that which is texturally vibrant as well, only pausing for breath. Again, that other sense of thought, the you need to breathe in those moments. And in those moments with breathing, you can also breathe in that which is coming from your partner in the moment as well. So you get more deeper profundity in those thoughts and forbidden fantasies, granting your every desire, instinct, not language. Again, coming out of the voice now, walk into that which is natural, normal, hits on every level. And then tangled, arcane need preserved in amber, That's such a lovely thought to finish in it. Arcane knee preserved in amber, that moment glorified within that amber for someone else to view from some time in the future. Very lovely. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Valentina.
All right.
And quite a different way from the from the other ones. Boy, that was a trade-off juxtaposed to the first few writes we had.
It was a nice departure. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. All right, I'm going to post this next piece by Nan529, and perhaps we'll have Jeremy read if you'd like to.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
What's Wrong With You by Nan529. Two energies living next door to each other. God, how different we are. You're a bully and I'm a pacifist. You're filled to the brim with hatred eating away inside of you. You've tried your very best to upset me. Still, I don't get what's wrong with you. You put up a fence on purpose that blocks my view. Now I sit on the other side of it with my table and chair, odd glass of wine or two, radio on, fairy lights up, wind chime tinkling away. You really wanted me to scream and shout. Never understood I'm not like you. Your negative rage is shouting and screaming, but since you put up the fence, I don't have to look at you. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. I have a little sun trap. My energy is so much calmer. My new bamboo trees scream off the fence now that you can't see me. That's a positive, too. If your brains are dynamite and there wouldn't be enough to blow your hat off, when you realize if you want to be happy in life, I'll give you a clue. When someone does something negative instead of raging, sit and think. There's always a solution. Take that negative and turn it into a positive, and you can be happy too. Live and let live. Don't judge others. Let love into your life. Life is what you make it, by the way. Turn your frown upside down. Even you could be happier too. And poem.
Great read, Jeremy. Thank you very much. And then took if your brains were dynamite, there wouldn't be enough to blow off your hat. And she tackled this one with a little bit of pomp and circumstance with that first stanza, offering up humor, a little tidbits of not raging humor, but just enough to set that anger that is being displayed, which kind of makes a nice fun back and forth. Two energies living next door to each other. God, how different we are. You're a bully. I'm a pacifist. Filled to the brim with hatred eating away inside of you. Now, that's quite the description of the next door neighbor. But then that thought, the second stanza, you put up a fence on purpose that blocks my view. Now I sit on the other side with my table and chair, on a glass of wine or two. Radio on, fairy lights up, wind chime tinkling away. You really wanted me to scream and shout. You'll never understand I'm not like you. Now, I like that thought. It goes from the anger and what this person is to the fact that, all right, you put up the fence that you thought you were going to piss me off, but, hey, I've made the best of that situation. I've even got fairy lights up, and I've got wind chimes and a table outside and some glass of wine. I'm going to enjoy myself. And then goes on to thank for putting it up, because now I can put up the bamboo and get even more ease at the beauty without listening to hear you rant and rave like a bleeding lunatic. And let's finish out. Back end of this is, hey, when you're delivered unto lemons, squeeze, make lemonade. Life is so much sweeter. Nicely done, man. Thank you very much. Jeremy, how about you? You got to read this. You did well.
Yeah. So once again, I'll make this all about me. I don't know how familiar it is for everybody else, but when you have a neighbor that you have a problem with, it is the worst. I recently moved a month ago, and it was a big part because we had a next door neighbor that we couldn't get along with. And the funny thing about having problems, petty problems with a next door neighbor, is that everyone kind of looks at the stories. I mean, it will consume your life and your mentality, living next to someone that you can't get along with. But everyone else looks at it as kind of a comedic lack of ability to have harmony. And I felt that in this, and I kind of realized my own situation because, yeah, when you try to sell the stories about, yeah, my next-door neighbor is the worst, there's no way that you can describe that situation without sounding like a moron yourself. And I think it's a paradox because that comedic struggle, I mean, the struggle when you're living it is very real. I have lived it, and you can't ignore it, and it destroys everything that you feel that is sacred and that is home and that is comfort. But when you try to tell the story, you just sound like what's in the picture here. You sound like that red-faced, purple-dressed, red-haired person shaking their fists, and everyone else is just saying, why can't you just get along with your neighbor? And so I like that. I like that it captures – a lot of this poem captures the humorous nature of a problem that really can be real. And when you step back and when you get away from it all, you go, yeah, you know what? I'm part of the problem as well. And I don't know. It's kind of introspective in that regard. So I appreciate the poem for those qualities.
Great thoughts, sir. I like the angle you drew on that being part of the problem too, because, yeah, you get so wrapped up in the moment that before you know it, yeah, you fall into that trap and you do make part of the issue more of an issue than it should be. And that's the temptation when somebody aggravates you to the point of you finally say, oh, God, I've got to say something now. And it just draws it out a little bit longer and a little bit harder. Great point, Jeremy. Thank you. All right, Mindy, how about you?
Well, Nan did a terrific job of describing it. And then I agree with Jeremy's words there, too. You know, sometimes when someone is determined to draw you off of your center, you do everything you can to maintain it. And I'm one of those people that has the determined, you know, optimistic viewpoint, a cockeyed optimist, some would say. But I try to do that same thing. But sometimes people defy that. It's like they know it, and they go out of the way to see how far you'll go to preserve that peace of mind, you know. And if it requires you to plant a few trees and hang some fairy lights, so be it. You know, she achieves her peace of ground and peace of mind all at one time. And I think she does it beautifully here with that note of humor.
Great comments, guys. Thank you very much. And another, this one dropped in a little bit of humor as well as the anger. So the rights are getting a little, offering up a wider view of birth in these prompts.
That's nice. Very cool. All right. We've got another SoundCloud here. This next piece is by Lal, and it's Once by Lal. I'm going to go ahead and get it set up here. Okay, we've got two recordings by her. I'm hoping that this is the one it is, because it's not titled. There we go.
Take My Hand, a poem by Lal. When shadows linger long and slow,
nope,
and there's no safer place to go. When doors are closed and walls stand tall, and all you seem to do.
Okay, that's not it. Let me check the one.
Once, a poem by Lal. Once I could fly, I tell no lie, above clouds and beyond. I had the wings that longed to sing, too eager to respond. But I was burnt, a lesson learned, what glistens can be grim. In search of gold, my wings would fold, and my world caved right in. Once I could dance, impress, enhance, an artist so sublime, a natural source of rhythm coursed, allowing me to shine. But now I just go round and must, go round and then, I face the truth, the loss of youth, to never see again. Of late I spin with wings of tin, on feet that will stay put. It's sad to think that one can sink and end up in a rut. Once I could fly, I tell no lie, once I could float on air, once I was young and beautiful, once I had time to spare. End poem.
Great read, Lal. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. And it if it isn't obvious, she took a round and round we spin with feet of lead and wings of sin. Lovely piece. Jeremy, why don't you tell us what you think?
Yeah, guys, I'm caught up in the format, and you guys are going to have to educate me because I'm not familiar with this, but it's an AABCCB, and I've never seen this before, and I'm just kind of – is there a name to this? Can either of you tell me if you've ever seen this kind of format before?
It does offer a nice tone of lyricality, almost singing through this. There was a certain point right in the middle where all of a sudden it took on a new new edge as it flowed really well. And the introduction of the inline rhyme kind of hit that note too.
I'm sorry for my lack of familiarity with poetic styles. I mean, I thought I'd seen it all before, but I've tried to recreate them myself. I'm not a very good rhyming poet, but I was very taken aback by this rhyme scheme, and it was mesmerizing. It's an AABCCB, and it flowed to a level that I don't have much else to say other than I'm just kind of dumbfounded by it and I want to read this over again. I mean, I think that it's very difficult to recreate sonnets especially, but any kind of rhyme scheme that is memorable, and this is no lie, in all of the poems that I've read in the many years that I've been on these pages, that I have found a unique rhyme scheme that has made me as speechless as this is. And no joke, this is really cool. I was really taken aback by it, and I think it was extremely successful. And that's what I took away from it.
Oh, absolutely. It has such a nice ease of flow that before you know it, you're finished, and you crave to go right back to the beginning again because you think you might have missed something on the first read, and that delivers you back again to a third. So you get to consume it on a more than once or even twice, because it flows that well and that easily. It comes off the tongue, off the mind, and it sets a nice even pace, as well as it walked that lyrical tone of music to the mind, which is what I think is tripping your mind on this at the moment. That it comes across, even though you haven't seen the rhyme scheme, it flows in such a manner that it tickles your mind to the point, oh, I like the way this rolls. And Mindy, how about you?
Although the count is different, the cadence of it has almost a limerick feel to it. So many poets that are as lyrical as Lal is will even kind of develop their own rhyme scheme after a while, just something that suits their own phrasing. And if that's how she's done this, or she's emulated other pieces and kind of composed her own, in the process, she's come up with a fabulous means of conveying beautiful words. And this piece I really connected to personally. So this felt special to me more than me analyzing lines and diagramming what in it spoke to me. The entire piece did. It really did. It had a spiritual overtone to it and a resonance that was rich and beautiful. And I just really appreciated it.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
I'm glad you said that, MK.
I'm glad you said that it was a limerick because I was looking for that. My mind was looking to have that limerick feel, especially with the count of it. So I'm glad you said that because it has that, but it has their own personal twist as well. And I think, again, the fact that she was able to create something that was unique is – I'm going to have to come back to read the content, but yeah, no, I'm glad you picked up on that limerick piece because that it does have that march. It has that snare drum hi-hat feel to it, but with a different with a different beat too. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but you know what I mean?
Right.
Oh, absolutely. I like that snare drum, a rap thought. That was cool. And Mindy, I didn't pick up on that sort of limerick, so I too thank you for this, for kind of noticing that angle, that it does come off that way. And yes, you're right. Excellent. Great comments, guys.
I'm going to go ahead and post if you would like to read. Sir, it's all on you.
Sure. How does she do that? By Pink Fairy 5. I run into traffic, the rush of dodging and diving. Others do not understand, having never reached adrenaline nirvana. She is nuts, some say, behind my back or to my face. I care not. My love for myself is not dependent on their approval. You are too old to bungee jump, one tells me in a prissy way. I laugh as I prepare to jump out of an airplane, not caring if the parachute opens or not. I have had a terrific life. I am ready for the next step. I doubt there will be naysayers on the other side of the veil. Stop her, someone screeches as I jump. This thrills me as much as the leap itself. They throw my chute out and I catch it. How does she do that? One of the doubters asks. Faith, my children say. Confident I will somehow land on my feet. End poem. Mindy, you get the first one on this. I think you're smiling.
I am smiling. How could you? You can feel it, huh? I love this piece. I love this piece because she dares. You know, she dares to find that edge and to seek what lies beyond. And I think as people, as poets, that's a really bold and wonderful resolve and peaceful spot within yourself, even though it's full of adrenaline and that nirvana that she's seeking and with the line, she's nuts, some say, behind my back or to my face. She doesn't care. She's living. She's living her life, and she's present in that moment. And she is ready for whatever it brings her. And there's a fabulous, brave, and bold face to that that I just adore. A lot of heart in this, right? And it's fabulous. You captured the lines well, too, Rex. Nice job.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Mindy. And Jeremy, how about you?
Totally agree, MK. And yeah, there's that Selma and Louise in all of us that want to just keep going and do that thing that pushes us all beyond the edge, right? But what is interesting in going back over this is the third and the audience of it all. I mean, how important is it for those that push the edge to have that audience? For those that are saying, oh my gosh, look how extreme that act is. And even the second line of the third, this thrills me almost as much as the leap itself. So the fact that there's an audience and there's a support system that is oohing and aahing and covering their mouth when someone does something that's extreme almost doubles or definitely amplifies the whole act itself. And that's kind of an interesting commentary that I thought was picked up on by Pink Fairy and on the whole point of pushing the envelope. So, yeah, much enjoyed for that perspective.
That's a great thought. I like that. I continue that. Just go down to the next line on that. Throw my chute out and I catch it. How does she do that? One of the doubters asked. Faith, my children say. Confident I will somehow land on my feet. There's that notation of confidence. They will throw my chute out and I will catch it. There is that notation. There is always somebody who has my back, even in the direst of circumstances, so to speak. And I love the metaphor that rolls through this. It does, as many said, it walks that angle of not caring what others think because you're living in the moment rather than praying not to be delivered unto the next existence too early. But if you're always worried about dying, then you're not actually living. And it does hit on that notion of only fools walk in where angels fear to tread. It kind of hits that notion, throws that right on top of its head and says, you know what? Angels may fear it. I have no fear because one day I'll get to see the angels anyway. So it doesn't matter whether it's now, next week, next year, or 10 years from now. It is what it is. Great comment, guys. Thank you very much.
And we just
play with.
Hello.
Rex, we
Gene. What you doing?
Hello, 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 hello.
Hello. No. You're out with the lunatics tonight.
Look, I'm calling in because I saw there was 2 years for a long time. And then I saw that Jeremy called in. And I said, oh, God bless Jeremy. I said, well, I guess maybe I should call in and show my face. Well, I'm not showing my face. Lend my voice.
No,
I don't have a clue what the hell you're talking about.
We were running a great thing, me and Mindy. Then Jeremy jumped in, added a third angle of a voice and play. And now we've got you to add a fourth.
Oh, no, no. I'll be happy to read anything you want, but I don't have a clue what the hell you're talking about. Let's be real.
How fortuitous. How fortuitous. She said it, Rex. You heard her say it. She said she'd be willing to read whatever we had, so I just posted it.
Oh, God. Now, small words, guys. Small words. Let's not get crazy. I know how to say Pythagoras and Pythagorean. I can do that. Anything beyond that, I'm not promising. Hi, Jeremy. How are you?
I have a smile on my face. I'm happy to have you with us. I'm giggling the whole time. Welcome aboard.
I'm just calling to raise hell. That's all I'm doing.
Ooh.
See?
It sounds like Jean's got, she's full of piss and vinegar at the moment. Let's have some fun.
Yeah. Well, you are queued up, girlfriend.
Oh, look, did he put that up for me? Aw.
I did. You're welcome.
I knew it. I knew it. I know. But this is payback time because I do this to everybody all the time when they're on my show. So I get it. Let me see what I got. The history of us. Like, who left? The tail side of this picture. I don't know what that means, but okay. Sure, I missed that part. The history of us. It happened under an explosion, a bang that reverberates until today. Shards from stars, scars from stars, unlaid within us, within you, within me. I was just one of the countless casualties when titans clashed, when stars collided, when two people fornicated with no intention to reproduce, a mere accident of nature. The face out of this picture. A bang came from pitch black, a nebulous fog, then clouds appeared. Quarks, protons, and leptons in the dark, fabricating stars and sparks for millions of years. A peacock dance of constellations in pink and purple fuchsia tutus. They prance, pray, and swirl in slow motion, throwing behind them swaths of clouds that dissipate in a tie-dye canvas without frame. Particles, snowflakes, planets became thousands of moons and suns grew like mushroom in a chemical bath. Where atoms float in a sea of milk, we are here as templates at the threshold of time. I am an accident, no fault of mine, from this convergence of conditions sent unto this planet to meet you, to shine a quasar in night's velvet background. For the time of the lightning, when your arrow struck my armor piercing to the core of my being, perhaps it was all preordained or just happenstance. A celestial serendipity, where I still remain standing here, still feeling the ripples, the wavelets, the reverberations of you, of where you and I once upon a time crossed each other's paths and passed.
Great read, Gene. Thank you very much. Damn. Cola, that was a grand piece. And I'm dying to hear what Mindy thinks of this one.
Yeah. It was, and she did a marvelous job of reading this, Gene. You really did. It's one of those pieces that has to unveil itself in the read. And you did that at such a cadence that we're able to be drawn into the piece. And there's such powerful emotion in this. And you can tell that she's tried to step back a little bit from the experience itself enough to have perspective on it, but still cannot keep that infusion of emotion from the piece itself. But her language is got a harsh tone to it, which mirrors the feeling itself. And a bang came from pitch black and nebulous fog. Then clouds appeared, quarks, protons, and leptons of the dark, fabricating stars and sparks for millions of years. There's such a history of them that she's included the immensity and enormity of the universe within this rite. There's so much that it felt like a force that pulled them together. And what followed was not expected, but they were compelled nonetheless. And this is a powerful rite and one that I think is probably very near and dear and to collapse and a brave rite as well.
Great comment, Mindy. Thank you very much. And Jeremy, how about you?
Circle back to me. My computer crashed and I lost my visual. Come back to me in a second, please.
Okay, no problem. Gene, you got to read that and you did a great job with it. What about
thanks,
you?
Jeremy. What did I ever do to you? I'm only kidding. I really like this poem very much. I really do. It's I loved it to tell old. And I think that Colette really worded it nicely. You know, to have such wonderful, background to a relationship, you know, and to have it worded this way is, you know, pretty incredible. I think that Colette really outdid herself on this one. I think it's probably one of my favorite rites by her. Whether you start at the first two stanzas or you take it just from the third one down, either way, it's really well done. And so the first two leading in, they were good. I think that the most of what I really enjoyed falls in the second half of this poem. Well, not even half, but, you know, the second portion. I think that it was really just well worded, well thought out. And yeah, it was great. So, nice.
Nice work. Thanks, thank you. This was quite the piece, offering up the tail side of the picture and the face side of the picture as a kind of a juxtaposed thought. Those open two stanzas kind of hit on that notion of maybe needing something in the moment, and as she kind of hits on the passing shift in life and the foot. When two people fornicated with no intention to reproduce, a mere accident of nature. And then back to at the prompt, which was, we are a series of accidents. But that this using the universe and the Big Bang as that thought of opening up, all right, someone in the moment, and all of a sudden things converge, and then she opens up the second one with a bang, there's that darkness. All of a sudden, everything opens up to glorious brilliance. There's a nebulous fog, quarks, protons, leptons, fabricating stars and sparks for millions of years. There's that notation of us going back that far and that initiality of how we keep reconfiguring ourselves in future generations with birth. But just kind of hit on that notion right up front that this was strictly physical in nature to begin with. And I love the way she drew this in, the peacock dance constellations, pink and purple fuchsia tutus, the particles, snowflakes, thousands of moons and suns grew like mushroom in a chemical bath. Boy, that hits on the notion of the physicality in the moment. And then this thought, where was it? Perhaps it was all preordained or just happenstance, a celestial serendipity. Again, hitting on that universal thought of how things sometimes work is kind of is a bit of Zen in here. And even though once upon a time we crossed each other's path, there's still that note in that last stanza with the still feeling the ripples, the wavelet reverberation of you. So there's that nice touch of something beautiful in the moment, but wasn't destined to last, but it's something you can look back on as we look back in into space and see the millions and trillions of light years away from here where a star bursts, when we're only now getting the light. There's that realization at the back end of this that there was a truly beautiful moment, even though it was accidental or came across as accidental. Nicely done, Colette. Thank you very much. And Jeremy, how about you?
Yeah, I'm back up and running again. Gene, that was a wonderful read, so I was worried that I was going to have to comment not to belittle your interpretation because you did a wonderful job of this, but I was trying to do it all from memory.
I was just teasing. Because
no,
you said, you have to come back to me and then Rex come right to me. I said,
you had a wonderful interpretation of it, and I was caught up in, and I was able to comment off of just how you were able to present this poem. So it's a compliment to you. I think it's interesting how it comes in two chapters, and I want to expand a little bit on what Rex said on this because, yeah, if you think about the universal nature of it, and the first chapter is much more of a brevity. And it goes from something more ethereal, and then it comes to something more personal very quickly, and something more sexual. And then it's more drawn out and almost more explained in the second. And I think it's kind of that cool cosmic feel, right, that we all have, that we're all part of something greater. And everything that we do on this earth, every moment that we have, every interaction we have, is part of something greater and something more meaningful. And that's what kind of made me feel connected to this. I think it's ultimately a love poem. And it's a love poem disguised something with that scientific touch. And I think that sometimes if you sit back and enjoy the fact or let yourself feel that you're fact of something greater, something more part of the cosmos, then there's a deep spiritual connection with everybody. So I kind of like that touch. And I like the fact that reminded me of that thought. So Colap, kudos to you. It was a beautiful poem.
Lovely comments, gang. Thank you all very much. Well, that was Colap does some deep pieces, but that one kind of walked a different tone for her, and pleasure to read it.
All right.
Oh, boy.
Now, moved into the segment of the show where it converts to Pythagoras. And we have a piece by Ken Smith. And Jeremy, if you'd like to read that, I would appreciate it.
Absolutely. Somewhere North of Your Place by Ken Smith. 1,000 miles above Sault Ste. Marie in a rundown nickeled mine, that's home for me. 1,000 miles from a moonlit cabin by the water, a shack. With a half a silver circle cut in the door, a neon sign in the dark. Among cedars, links off and on, branches full of crows, black autumn leaves, tumble to the ground 1,000 miles. They rustle. I still hear the sound and poem.
Great read, Jeremy. Thank you very much. And Ken took the prompt, the oldest, shortest words, yes and no, are those which require the most support. All right, Gene, what do you think?
Now I'm trying to figure it out. Okay. I know not to call in after midnight. I'm always at a deficit. I like the poem itself. I thought it was cleverly written. I'm not sure about the take on the prompt, I'm not going to lie. But I think that it really, the imagery was good. It paints a nice, it paints a good picture. You can visualize all of it. And, if it was all played out in front of you, it would have enough detail to actually carry it. And I think that that's just a wonderful, definitely a wonderful, attribute to the poem itself. I'm not sure how the quote fits in there. I'll let you figure that one out. You can tell me, because I'll go for that. But definitely.
I can only try.
Oh, that's okay. It's better than my guess, because I'm more on that. I like the poem. I can't say any more about that.
You do just fine. I know this is not your usual venue to dig into, so we won't press you. All right, Mindy, how about you?
I love this. Sault Ste. Marie is in this. My grandfather was from there. This really has an incredible story in it. Two souls parted by those miles, those 1,000 miles. Him somewhere way, way up north in a rundown nickel mine, and that's where he's at right now, while thinking about that 1,000 miles south where that moonlit cabin is by the water and the shack with a half silver circle cut in the door. I love that. Like an outhouse.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, really, that's what it is. Amongst cedars, like on and off branches, full crows. That must be their meeting place, that motel. Hotel, yeah, or hotel motel. And the activity that they engaged in together there, that tumble in the ground and 1,000 miles that still rustle. Thoughts of her still there and powerful enough to compel thoughts and longing even at that distance, and maybe even more so because of that distance. But I think it's a vivid right one that paints itself well in our mind's eye.
Excellent. I love that thought, Mindy. Thank you very much. And Jeremy, how about you? You got to read it.
Yeah, from the title where it says somewhere north of your place. So this is saying even beyond the remote areas that you know, that comfort area that you call home, that little town that we all say, I'm embarrassed to be from here. This is somewhere north of that. So this is saying, you know what, even if you think you know little places that are special, something that's sentimental in your heart, I'm a little bit beyond that. And so that's kind of endearing. That's saying, you know what, I'm a little bit farther beyond someplace that you need to come and explore, and that's where things can still be special. And I think it was described as something special. There's the little teeny nuances that make me feel like, yeah, this is my hometown, but no, it's a little bit beyond. So it's kind of saying, yeah, there's more to find out there in the world. There's little treasures, those little moments that people can have, those little pieces of gold that are still out there that is Americana, or I'll say Americana, that we can all enjoy and appreciate. And so that it takes you home, but that encourages you to go a little bit beyond home and explore more. So I don't know. It was sentimental to a very cool degree to me. So I liked it.
I like that thought. Excellent, Jeremy. I got the thought between yes and no is, yes, he decided he needed to go, but she wouldn't go with him. So the no angle, that is, she stayed. But the interplay is there's still some thought and play within them, because you hit on that angle with a shack with a half a silver moon, silver circle cut in the door, a neon sign in the dark. They hit on that notion of does a bear shit in the woods? The answer being yes. If a tree falls in the woods, but there's nobody there to hear it, does it make a sound? Also yes, but also no, because you don't get to hear it, but he does. So the angle plays well, but that half a silver circle cut in the door also hits on that notion. I'd rather be in that little hut to take care of business rather than out in the woods and maybe have poison ivy for toilet paper, so to speak. So, and in those moments, you get pondering thoughts because, yeah, you've only got this small, smelly little shack to take care of what you do. And in those moments, you think or read a newspaper or something. The cedars is a nice touch. The branches full of crows, the black autumn leaves. It adds a depth of beauty to the fact that even out here on the backside of everything, there is beauty to be held, because I can see it, I can touch it, I can feel it, I can know it. And that last line, they rustle, I still hear the sound. That points out the notation of the fact that there is that sense of us that once was. I still hear that sound. It's a fond memory that one ponders over as even though they've split, what might they be in that moment together up there? And what might he be on the back end, which is why he left in the first place? He wanted that touch of freedom, that smell of openness, that roam. Nicely done there, Ken. Thank you. All right. Well, that was actually quite the piece.
All righty. This next piece by J.C. Anders, if you want to read that first.
Sure. I hate the way I write, and so do you, by J.C. Anders. honeyed hollow, elastic words slathered in subtle nuance, like miles of brown barbecue sauce poured over four-day-old pineapple shredded pork, cold and greasy. Overly worshipped, embraced relics made of mercury and lead, compressed faux wood, holy form and holy faith, and holier-than-thou homonyms used to resurrect blue-eyed zombies with sunflower husk voodoo. Aesthetically ecumenist alliteration authored to pierce the shiny, happy vampires, forever secret stalkers, past the single-served bands and yesterday's friends, those long-lost lovers I would have rather forgotten. The unintentional Frankenstein slant rhyme, flowing with the melancholic timing found in a rhythmic heartbeat, the thump, the thump, the thump, thump, the baby screams, I'm flatlining, quick, call a doctor, until the tick-tock, growing cock, green-eyed alarm clock rings, I need to piss, hiccuping yellow bile, yes, it's time to awaken from these vodka-induced dreams and write something real, yeah, for real, bro, something with meaning, flowing with feeling, or maybe, just maybe, I should go back to sleep and leave it all until tomorrow. End poem. Now that was quite the range running through this piece. I like the title. I hate the way I write, and so do you. But there's kind of a nice twisted bit of sarcasm in that note, because it offers up the nuance thought. I like the angle played with the barbecue sauce poured over four-day-old pineapple shredded pork, cold and greasy. It's kind of offering up the thought of sweetening up that which kind of stinks in the moment. But yeah, I got to do something with this. I like the this run of alliteration: faux wood, holy forming, holy faith, and holier than thou homonym. Woo-hoo. And the blue-eyed zombies and husk voodoo. That then he rolls into aesthetic ecumenist alliteration authored and happy vampires. There is such a note of the thought of those who want the simple aspects to be prominent rather than offering up a deeper thoughtful metaphorical venture which somebody can dig into with relish and open up their minds as well as the voice that offers up the words to begin with. And that's what I'm getting out of this. And then that thought, that last two stanzas, tick-tock, growing crowing cock, a green-eyed alarm clock. Again, that alliteration plus the sound that rolls within it. And I need to piss. The thought of waking up. And then, yeah, maybe I better leave this till tomorrow. I'm not really feeling it in the moment, which is probably a good look at saying, yeah, some things are best left either in the back of your mind to ferment a little bit more so they can actually offer up a cogent, tangible thought with that you're wishing to express, or just delete it altogether. And that might be like go back to sleep, get a little bit more bedtime, and wake up fresh instead of trying to pump something out offhand. I like this. It was different. Mindy, how about you?
Well, I think the man does protest too much. You know, there's something when you read ink from people who are adept at writing that they just cannot come off with a piece that is not good, because even the discussion of it not being good is good. You know, he had fun. He had a ton of fun in this, busting his own chops and through it, delivering some really killer phrases, some fun lines, some, you know, and even the highly poetic inclusions of aesthetically accumulous alliteration. You know, he's really poked and jabbed quite a bit at himself in a scathing, you know, smart-assy, acerbic way, and had a lot of fun doing it and came off with a great piece that, despite all claims to the contrary, is good. And I think he's kind of full of it when he says, and so do you, because I think he's a wonderful writer, and I really enjoyed this piece.
Thank you very much, Mindy. And Jeremy, how about you?
Yeah, first of all, Rex, I think you handled the read of this brilliantly, because it spans so many different genres, And to make it all seamless the way that you did was masterfully done. But MK nailed it. I mean, JC Anders in this, he knows what he's doing. I mean, come on. He's too talented of a writer, and you can pick up on it in just his poetic device that he smatters throughout this, that he knows what he's doing. He's hitting on some very common iconography, and he's doing it in a very tongue-in-cheek way. And you're just kind of going, okay, this is a poet that's kind of making fun of the way that we all write poetry, and he does it in a very subtle, brilliant way that I very much giggled with the whole way through. I mean, it's joking all of us, and I think it's very well portrayed. He touches mm-hmm. on so many different tones that I know that he appreciates all those tones because he's able to speak per stanza. He's able to speak to them. And then the one that spoke to me, the lines that spoke to me the most were the very ones at the end, because in my head, I write the most brilliant poems right before I fall asleep, and then I can never remember them in the morning. And that's what he says in the last two. He says that in the last two lines. He goes, I got to go to sleep. I'll wait until tomorrow. Because, yeah, I mean, there's so many times when you finally have quiet and you can listen to your mind speak. And that really touched me. So that's when I realized that he was picking on me just as much as everybody else when he said that in the last two lines. So, no, it was a great poem, and I took it all very lightheartedly. But there's a high degree of intelligence to it all, and I think, like I said, MK nailed it in her evaluation of it. So, great write.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with the high degree of intelligence. You don't get to voice on this level a range of thought without actually understanding, as he put it, that nuance with the brown barbecue sauce up top trying to pretty, but that's all as it is. He did a great play running this out. I love the thought in running it Frankenstein, the TikTok. The angle of play in this was cleverly done and poised. And Gene, how about you? Are you mutating?
Yeah, she is.
Oh, okay, cool.
There
yeah,
she is.
I guess I am. You know, it takes me a split second to figure it out. I go, oh, is he talking to me still? I thought he did a good job writing about interesting things. It was clever and well done, great imagery throughout. And I went back and I had to look up the prompt because, of course, you know, I never know these things. But it was be silent or let thy words be worth more than silence. So it's either, you know, do it right or don't say anything, you know. Kind of like when your mother said, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. Same kind of principle. You know, be silent and let thy words be worth more than silence. I don't know. I think there's a clever take on that. You know, he's putting things out there and making it work. So I like it. I like that.
Excellent. Thank you, gang. Great comment.
All right.
I love that.
All right. This next piece up is by Eric Svensson, and we've got a SoundCloud for it.
Between yes and no, 21 grams, no's. Supersonic histrionics of tectonic plates. Pressure builds up. Fault line crisscross fallible minds. Dissect thought patterns, map desired destinations, research plausible outcomes, differentiate between fiction and fact, shove aside all beloved leather-bound terms, allow bookends to gather gay dust modes, Philistine smite the urge to delve into more learning, be an ass, touch your quiet jawbone in restful contemplation. For once, if not the very first time, just breathe. Allow unruly mind ministers to settle. Feel built-up pressure dissipate. Tectonic plates declare truth. Happy hiatus moment. Providence gifted us by Tigurus. Two-edged tongue sword, our greatest frenemy. reactive outburst versus proactive response. As a biped thinker, he or she shows their true colors. Golden fleece silence settles all chaos. Dissonance then genuflects before assonance. Tongue sword sheathed. Providence plays Pythagoras in my lap. Found the long-lost twin flame soul in his discourses. Amphitheater mind always directing play. Assumption mask placed upon personae. Mighty emperor sits in judgment, studies actions of orators. Not necessarily vehement words that butterfly freely. Rather prefer dragonflies dedicated directives. Between yes and no hovers deathly hallows ghouls and ghosts. Will my tectonic mind plates toast the curse? Incinerate all hope with a reactive blitzkrieg yes. Decide in haste, repent at leisure. Never regretted my nose, shortchanged myself with too many yeses. She'd wrap Pythagoras' bust in my study often. His genius always facilitates a super-duper magic carpet ride. In summation, gentle folk, each breath is a prayer. Wise old heart knows when to pause. Solar plexus gut fires warning signals right on time. Two-edged tongue sword, be gone, be sheathed. Shift of tectonic soul plate stabilized at death. So what is our true measure in the end? 21 grams, said physician Duncan MacDougall in 1907. Back to your beloved leather-bound tomes, dear poets. Read up how he measured our true worth in Haverhill, Massachusetts. End delightful poem.
Oh, I like that ending, Eric. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. A little touch of humor and a delightful poem. Nicely done. Mindy, this digs into a deeper realms of thought as well as play. What do you think?
Yeah, Eric likes to swim in those deeper realms. He really does. And
yes.
he comes up with the most incredible themes to run with. And this is one of those that I feel like I was on that magic carpet ride for, because he takes us from the history of the philosopher and the seediness in that place of classical study and appreciation and contemplation to the more practical application and the theme itself of that yes and no. It's a big jump there. But he's included it in such a fabulous way that the ride is incredible always. And his phrasing, to not mention his phrasing and his use of imagery, would be just a pitiful thing because he's just so spectacular at it. Providence gifted us Pythagoras, two-edged tongue sword, our greatest frenemy. I love that. I love that line. I do. Reactive outburst versus proactive response, as biped thinketh. He or she shows their true colors. It comes right out the mouth. You can't help it. Golden fleece silence settles all chaos. And true, it does. But he sure enjoys sharing his thought and does so in a beautiful way. And I really enjoyed this piece. Nice work, Eric.
Excellent. I knew you'd add some good stuff to that thought. And this was one of those deep thinking piece that you got to dig into because it hits on a number of levels. Jeremy, what about you?
21 grams. Isn't that what they say is the weight of the soul? Isn't that what he's referring
mm-hmm.
to?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and I love Eric's poetry, guys. I really do because he fucks with us. I mean, he really does, to be blunt about it. He throws in words just because he loves language. And he in this particular poem, he throws in a lot of great thought and philosophers to think that he's going beyond and you're having to do a lot of research to pay attention to what he does. And then he throws in a word like frenemy because he's fucking with us, guys. I mean, he uh-huh. loves language, and it's a wonderful ride. And I really love his poetry. And what I got out of this was definitely in the second half of the second, being asked, touch a quiet jawbone in restful contemplation for once, if not the first time, just breathe. Allow unruly mind meniscus to settle. Be built of pressure to dissipate. Tectonically, he's just saying, you know what? Enjoy it. Enjoy it. And let your mind do what it does, and let the dance do the happy dance. And I think he does that in his wordplay. And it's a wonderful ride for me. I mean, part of me is sitting here looking up every line that he's doing, and then I realize, you know what, Eric? Okay, you're enjoying this as much putting this together as you know that you're making me try to keep up with what you're saying. And it's more of a roller coaster ride. And that's what poetry, in my opinion, that's what beautiful poetry should be. It's an experience and a love of language as much as a love of thought. And especially, it's never – I follow Eric, I read all this stuff, but it's never hit me as clearly as much as been in this poem that, you know what, he realizes – that it's a game, and he's playing the game. And if you pay attention to his love for everything that is the gist of poetry in my mind and what poetry should be about, I think he captured it here. So maybe I'm gushing too much, but I really enjoyed this. I love the sentiment of it, and I love how where it took my mind and how he took me there.
Oh, absolutely. There was a lot of fun and play within this one. That opening thought of a histrionics of tectonic plate pressure builds up, research plausible outcomes, differentiate between fiction and fact. There is that notation. If you can't repeat a hypothesis, then there's no scientific truth within that, which is the ease, because he hits on that notion of fault lines crisscross fallible minds. So there's always something, if you're so hell-bent on proving something, you don't actually get to prove it because you're not thinking outside the box. You're thinking within a strict realm, and our minds, just like us, they're fallible. We tend to walk into a realm and offer it up as fact. Despite the obvious notion, there is something underlining it which doesn't add up, and therefore it's not provable. Yet we still hold on those notes of truth. And that second stanza, shove aside all beloved leather-bound tomes, allow bookends to gather gay dust motes. Philistine smite the earth, delve into more learning. Be an ass. Touch your quiet jawbone in restful contemplation. For one, if not for the very first time, just breathe. There's a notation right there. You know what? Take a deep breath. There is no issue in actually delving into something new to learn, rather than sit there and be profound and offering up a thought which doesn't work, and keep working on that isolated theorem until you kill it to death, like how archaeologists walk a strict line without actually looking at that which they're looking at and seeing the observable thought from somebody who knows how rock work works and how it dissolves, how it work runs down, and then just telling them it's garbage and trying to ruin their thought, because they are the ones who understand the physiology, the makeup, and how that breaks down, as opposed to you, who's an archaeologist, and just offering up a theorem as to how the history of this particular realm and figure walk. You can't be a singularity and not take in that which is offered up by another section of science, which speaks to a deeper thought, which I got within that one there. And I did like the ending of that status. Tectonic plates declare a truce. Happy hiatus moment. There is that that notion of if you do take the time to breathe and open up your mind a bit, then you might learn something. And then there is a happy medium where both can be involved in the same conversation without going overboard. And I too like that thought, Jeremy, you brought about in front of me. I thought that was a clever drop-in right there. And then he hits on between yes and no, hovers deathly hallows, ghouls, and ghosts. Yeah, kind of hits on that notion I just had about the end between archaeology and other scientific modems, how people get destroyed in the motion because it doesn't fit the pattern of those who are offering up the singular ideal, because it means if that's truth, their money goes away because that's what they live on within that realm. It's the influx of money to prove their theories correct or their thoughts, not theories. Because you can't, if you're not proving a theory, then it's just a thought, a hypothesis. So, what else we got? And I did like that angle with the 21 grams down the bottom, because that point to that thought, he had the experience that with one person, the loss of 21 grams, but he couldn't prove the theory additionally past that, because he had four patients on the table at the time. So I thought that was a great thought to finish off the bottom end of this. Excellent piece, Eric. Thank you very much. Yeah, I babbled on that one, didn't I?
No, there was a lot. There was a lot to cover in that piece. Going back over it, I even saw something else. I was like, yeah. All right. Well, I've got next piece here by Arliss, and if you would like to read that for us, Russ.
Sure. At play in the field of existence, Arliss B. The wind billows no reward for the isolated heart. The world holds no meaning for those transported in ecstasis. Beyond the beyond shimmers the horizon of blessedness. Only the sinner qualifies for entry. Only the lost lamb regains the fold. Contemplation pulls me toward the threshold of being. What beckons from afar rings like a shepherd's call to his flock of goats, his beret teachers. Ezra Pound paced the compound's cage of madness and treason, his trial sent him to a hospital bed, then on to Venice, where he wrote, lived, and died, his cantos obscure. I have witnessed the new birth of poetry. I have testified to the wonder of words, to wound, then heal, to nurture, then mourn. Poetic hymns construct a gateway to joy. Doves flock to a feeder meant for starlings. Size matters only to the victor. They conquered throngs, smuggles war power. Through weakness, Nietzsche shudders in his grave. Alone before God, the triune self ricochets from transcendence to supplication, relating itself to itself. Itself somersaults into union with the divine. What is triumph over what would be? Potential, actual, pick your path to volition. Will your way into the fray of dread and death? We hurtle towards demise, clawing all the way. Poetry signals release, but the flag is torn. End poem. Damn. And let's start with you. My apologies. I got a crackle in my throat. Start with you, Jeremy, please.
Yeah, Arliss. Arliss, you went deep on this one, buddy. I mean, there's a play between, in my opinion, there's the three pronged trident in this one. There's the artistry of poems. There is obviously the religious aspect, and then there's the philosophical aspect. And how all three of those, between religion, between science, and between art, how they all come together is a tough mix, because they're always trying to gain their own self-importance. And I think Arliss kind of rides that razor's edge with this, and he kind of pays homage to all three. And it's funny that I'm only finding three different talents to all of this, and there's four chapters to it. So I don't know really what he was trying to get at. I think poetry definitely reigned. In the third, the lines that stuck out the most to me was in the third, in the beginning, when I have witnessed numerous poetry and I have testified to the wonders of the words. I felt that that was where his heart lied. But there's so many nods to the inner tenets. There's so much other. There's obviously the odes to religion, and there's obviously the odes to philosophy that makes me kind of wonder if all three can't live together. And then the end kind of threw me for a loop as well. When we hurtle towards his demise, clawing all the way, poetry signals the release, but the flag is torn. I mean, there's this struggle that this has for me. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm doing it justice on what Arliss was trying to convey in this, but I definitely was intrigued by the thought that it took me down, the path it took me down, and what he's trying to bring together, and the conversation, at least between the three. So to him, I definitely nod for that effort.
Excellent comment there, Jeremy. Thank you very much. And Mindy, how about you?
Yeah, I love the way that Jeremy broke this one down. I really do. I appreciate every aspect of it. And just expounding on what you've already shared here, I really do think that those end lines there, the poetry signals release, but the flag is torn, and in my mind, signals that resolve of bringing those three different categories, aspects, if you will, together. But even though they are brought together in some sort of a resolve, they're still a different a foot on each land, so to speak. They all maintain their separateness. That flag can't represent all three of them because there is still a gap between. They come together and meet, but not merge. If that makes sense, in my mind's eye, that's the way I'm envisioning it. So he's appreciated, and he's incorporated, and he's resolved and brought them all together, but not to blend them, so that each can be respected for its own particular light on aspect. And I think this is a wonderful piece and a very intellectual piece, and these prompts are really evoking and promoting those people who are deeper thinkers to share some of these aspects that they don't get to, perhaps, in some of the everyday poetry that we write. This allows and even invites, I think, for those people who are deeper intellects to go ahead and open up and share. And it's a marvelous write, and you did a great read of it, too.
Great thoughts, you two. And I do like that last line, the flag is torn. It kind of has me between the thought to everything you've offered up, including there was a nice line in there about Nietzsche rolls over in his grave, so to speak. It had me thinking of a few lines that were once uttered. When power leads man towards arrogance, poetry reminds him of his limitations. When power narrows the area of man's concern, poetry reminds him of the richness and diversity of existence. When power corrupts, poetry cleanses. That was uttered by JFK back in 61-62. And it was a thought to, much like what Arliss did with his, there's a balance. And the poet sees the, even with the torn flag, that offers up even its own thoughts as far as digging into the pain, the despair, the ease of happiness, the aloofness, all angles that one delivers oneself through with the voice he offers up. It has bearing, it has meaning, it has a state which affects that which is, as opposed to just a plain voice, because it offers up a language that a lot of people can walk into and understand, even if it's on the heavy, on the metaphorical end. And that is the angle I think he's taking here, because you hit on this thought, what was it? Ezra Pound paced the compound's cage of madness and treason. His trials sent him to a hospital bed, then on to Venice, where he wrote, lived, and died his Cantos Obscure. Yet, he's offering up Ezra Pound here as an important piece. And then again, in the third one, I have witnessed the new birth of poetry. I have testified to the wonder of words, to wound, then heal, to nurture, and mourn. Poetic hymns construct a gateway to joy. There's that offering of walking outside that which can drive one down a dark alley, but yet offer up something that actually bleeds in the moment and speaks to a lot of people. And then it's thought, doves flock to a feet of meant for starlings. Sighs, that is only for the victor. The conquered throng smuggles power through weakness. Nietzsche shudders in his grave. That gives over that thought of the Uberman, the Superman, so to speak. And it hits on the triumphs over what would be a potential actual pick your path of elevation. Again, running that angle, will your way into the fray of dread and death? Again, going into that angle, do not be afraid to walk a path that others do not, just for the simplicity of being on the same page as everyone else. Do not give in, offer up. That voice is more powerful than anything else, and it straddles all three of those genres and more. They can speak to power, they can speak to spirituality, and it can speak to the depths of humanity itself. Don't be afraid to offer that voice. And apologies for that. Long-winded little bit of insanity.
These all type right. of pieces invite that sort of comment and commentary. I mean, you can't hardly give this nice piece and move on, you know?
We seem to have had a bevy of those nights.
Yeah, when somebody's invested in blood and tissue and a right, you really kind of have to reflect that in your response. And I think that your responses were fantastic. I have a question for you. You have 3 minutes, or actually 2 minutes left. So.
Okay. Then I let that one be the last one in the evening. There will be a part two for this next Tuesday, which means we'll be digging into ever more deepening realm of Pythagorean thoughts coming across the pages from everyone else we didn't get to tonight. So that is three straight weeks of some deep thought from Vonnegut to Pythagoras covering three different shows. Now that's a great way to play off an angle of the vast realm between Vonnegut and Pythagoras and just getting some wonderful light. Mindy, I've got to thank you for being my co-host tonight and doing the board work. Gene, thank you for coming in. Jeremy, appreciate you for stepping up and coming on board to read and comment. This was a great evening. I had a lot of fun. Can't wait to do it again and finish out the rest of Pythagoras next week.
Terrific show.
Yes, it was. Thank you very much, Mindy. All right, gang, since we're at the back end of things, I guess tonight we'll be saying good night and sleep well, and we'll see you later on in the day for Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters on.
Yeah. It's the Twisted Sisters Twisted tomorrow. Tuesday. That's right.
Yeah, it's tomorrow, buddy.
And the Twisted Mister, no less.
Yes. Yeah, I get that one. Yeah. You're invited, Rex. I'll be there.
That sums us up nicely. Good night, guys. Wonderful prompts.
Good night, everybody.
Okay, good night.
Thank you, everybody, and good night.
Right. Thanks, Mindy.
You bet.